Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast, probably the cheapest episode of the End Zone Podcast you will be listening to, because Ryan, I don't know if you experienced this problem as a podcaster, but I'm slowly starting to realize I think my university in about a month and a half's time is going to revoke my nice free big Zoom where I can have unlimited people on and record at the same time. And they're probably going to close out my creative cloud. And so how exactly am I going to be able to record a podcast with more than two people and edit said podcast down, especially when I have intro music? So it just, there are problems incoming. This is about to become a much more expensive hobby than I want it to be.
You know, you're correct. And hello, Eric. It's nice to be back. But yes, you're right. After graduating college last year, you know, I also realized the pending doom. The good news is you can have Zoom calls with just like one other person and it's fine. There's no like time limit. But yeah, when you have more than one other person, it's a time limit. So yeah, that will be sad. I also was sad about losing Spotify, student Spotify, and like the Hulu thing. Yeah, I lost all that when I graduated. So yeah, I mean, you're definitely you're on the right track in terms of learning that, you know, getting old is trash, and it just comes with issues and things that you don't want. But yeah, now you're more accustomed to what life will be like for you when you're out of college, Eric. I like it.
Yes, I've committed to the Disney bundle, so I do still have Hulu. I never really use Hulu, but it's cheaper than paying the $85 now for ESPN Plus, which is a service I use quite often. ESPN Plus, just a solid, to me, the best streaming service there is.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to deal with Paramount Plus here, and over the summer I might have to stop watching Champions League. That's really bumming me out, but you know, it's all possible that maybe I luck into some sort of increased hourly income. Well, I got a raise, but more hours maybe at work. Maybe I'll make some more money, but you know, I am quickly learning I'm going to have to cut some things out. I want to continue, of course, doing the podcast. So I think it's going to be, I'm just going to have to like eat the $20 a month it costs to have auditions so I can edit it together. So that's just part of the deal now, I guess. It is trash. It truly is.
Yeah. Yeah. I got ESPN Plus too. That's definitely the go-to. But yeah, I mean, you just gotta find a way, you know. You just gotta be great, Eric. That's my advice for you.
Be great. Well, yeah, I got to find, I guess, a second job or convince my bosses to give me a full-time job, which seems unlikely. But, well, you know, we'll see what all happens. It feels like this is the world that I now inhabit and live in. Luckily, I've saved money through college, so I do have a nice little chunk of money. I guess I'll just not be spending as much as I want to over this. I wanted to spend a lot of money over the next 2 weeks. I'm graduating. I want to do some nice things for myself, but I think I'm going to have to save some of that money so I can continue to do a podcast. So, well, yeah, no one really cares about those problems, though. And it was a complete waste of time. Ryan, so you noted before we started that I got right into it today. But there you go. This here was your waste of time that you
I knew it was coming.
That you have come to expect from me. We just wasted about 5 minutes of listeners' time. And now we can get to the podcast, the good stuff. The NFL draft is in the books. We'll just do podcast housekeeping early. This is going to be the last podcast episode for a while. You'll see a basketball episode populate tonight as well. I'm going to record that, but I'm going on vacation for 2 weeks. Trey's getting into summer mode and I think maybe getting a job. So we're going to be gone for a little bit, but my promise is between now and July 4th, or the week after July 4th, which is when I envision season previews starting, because that's about 8 weeks to the regular season is July 4th week or around there. There will be four podcast episodes. So four podcast episodes over the next 2 months. interspersed randomly. Best way to keep in touch with that, just subscribe. Subscribe to the podcast feed. We won't be blowing it up a ton in the summer because there's not much going on. And then when we get to the fall, you can easily just, oh, there's the End Zone podcast. I can listen to that there. And Ryan, thank you for joining us. I know Ryan has his own podcast and I've kind of stolen him away from my good friend Donnie, but I think I'm going to have to let Ryan go for a little while. So I don't think Ryan will be back till maybe we do our NFC East preview pod, but still, I would like it if Ryan would become more of a permanent part of this show, but I couldn't do that to Donnie. That would be cruel and kind of mean.
Yeah, we always get a lot of comments from Donnie on every time I come on. I mean, it's been fun, Eric. I'm a big draft guy, so when I can share draft thoughts, that puts a smile on my face. But I did get a podcast with Donnie Dunn for our Roadie on the Horn podcast that we do together. And we recorded like during the draft, even it was like right after the Eagles got AJ Brown. So I was fired up. But yeah, I mean, it's been fun to come on and talk draft for sure.
Yeah. So this last time you'll see Ryan until July when we get back into stuff, season previews. But today, we're going to keep this short, sweet, and to the point. Here's what we're doing today. We're going back and forth a few times. We're going to give some draft winners. Then we're going to give one draft we feel differently about, which you could term that losers, but like I was thinking about it, Ryan. There are like maybe two teams I think are losers in this draft. Like I'm overly optimistic. You know this. I sent you guys a picture of this Word document that I was working on where I wanted to write. Go check out my blog. I'm starting to blog more. Drama of it all at sportsblog.com. I wrote a blog. At first, I had about 14 winners. At that point, I realized, okay, no one's going to read this. It'll just be way too long. Even six winners ended up being over 1,000 words, which is not what I want. I want to keep things more snackable and readable for people, as shorter attention spans are a thing that are happening in this country. And also, we're going to try to make our season previews a little bit quicker this year and do them team by team. So that should be a little bit interesting. But yeah, now I'm just lost, Ryan, because I just didn't think there were that many losers in this draft, but there were some teams I was like, huh, that's kind of like, that's, I wouldn't classify you as a winner, but like, that's interesting that you did that. And there's an interesting vision here. So we'll talk about that. If you have a loser, you can give a loser. And then we're going on break. We're going to determine the off season champion, one team for each of us that we believe above the rest totally won the off season. And yeah, then we'll maybe do some Game Pass nerd out and see like what teams we're excited to watch on Game Pass this year, which me and Ryan are invested in, obviously. So yeah, that's the way this episode's gonna go. So Ryan, let's just get started here. A winner for you from this draft.
Yeah, this is going to be one that we have talked about before, Eric, as a team that is kind of an evergreen winner of the draft, and that would be the Baltimore Ravens. It just seems like every year, Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh put together a draft class where it's like, wow, they just have a lot of really good football players, and they've consistently been a strong team in the AFC, even without making the playoffs last year. Still think the Ravens are, you know, one of the more respected teams in that conference, and thought they had another incredible draft again this year, landing Kyle Hamilton at pick 14, Tyler Linderbaum at pick 25 in the first round. Those are two players I had graded in my top 15 total in this draft class. So I was very impressed with that haul on day one, and they followed it up with a couple more days of some really strong picks, grabbing David Ojabo, another player who definitely could have gone in the first round if it were not for a torn Achilles during his pro day at Michigan. Travis Jones, drafted him in the third round out of UConn, another player that I thought fell a little bit further. There were some people that definitely thought he could be a late first round pick, or if not go in the second round. So to grab him in the third was definitely a really good pick. And even on day three, the Ravens grabbed some players I was pretty fond of in my scouting: Jalen Armour Davis from Alabama, Charlie Kohler from Iowa State, and Isaiah Likely from Coastal Carolina. Carolina. A couple guys that stick out to me about their day three haul that were also players I like. So no surprise, Eric DaCosta is one of the best general managers in terms of how he's able to maneuver the draft in the NFL. And he did again another great job again this year.
Yeah, I said it before, Alabama defensive player, just never a bad idea to just grab an Alabama corner in Jalen Armour Davis. And that's probably a guy that I could honestly see him maybe starting in the nickel, in the slot, halfway through the year probably.
Yeah, I think he's best fit in the slot for sure.
Seems like he had a pretty good year at Bama, even though he didn't play more than 1 year. It's tough to play at Bama, but if you can hold down a starter spot, which he did, it means you're pretty good.
Yeah, they had a guy on the outside named Patrick Surtain, who you're watching a lot on Sundays now, Eric, so that may have a little bit of reason for it.
Yeah, so, nope, totally agree. But to me, they might be the offseason champion. I mean, yeah, what they did in free agency, signing Marcus Williams. Like, the one question I have about the Ravens is for receiving threats. Like, you're betting pretty hard on Rashad Bateman, who was fine last year, but didn't like blow the doors off. Even though I really liked him as a prospect, he didn't really translate as well in his first year, but they are definitely going to be a running team again because they're getting J.K. Dobbins back and they have all that depth in the backfield, and it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. So yes, I agree. Baltimore Ravens, a definite winner. Let me just go, I'll just go trendy popular winner here, New York Jets. Really can't complain about what the Jets did. Zach Wilson, a huge winner. Get Garrett Wilson in there. That wide receiving core suddenly looks pretty good with Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore, and Corey Davis. That seems like there are some tangible threats there. Plus you add CJ Uzama, who was really good for the Bengals last year. That's where the size on that comes in. And I feel like that'll work out for them. And then they go out and they get Breece Hall to pair with Michael Carter. They obviously are a Mike LaFleur run offense. They want to run heavy, set up a play action. I think they can do that. The Jets just had a really solid draft, and who knows? They'll maybe still be the Jets, but it also wouldn't surprise me if they won 9 or 10 games this year because if Zach Wilson takes a step forward. But now you can really look at the Jets roster, I think, Ryan, and tell me if I'm crazy for thinking this, but their front seven looks pretty good. The secondary could use another corner maybe, but looks okay. And the talent there is good. I know Mekhi Becton has some worries, but Vera Tucker played well down the stretch. The line doesn't look terrible. I feel like the Jets could be one of these teams where if Zach Wilson doesn't perform at the level they want him to, they have some capital next year as well. I think that they could go try to trade for a quarterback and convince themselves that they're a quarterback away from competing as a playoff team. I don't think that's a crazy assessment.
Yeah, I mean, I think the concern for me with the Jets is that they're still really young at all these important positions. Like, these impact guys they have are either guys they drafted this year or in the last like 2 years or so in a lot of cases. Guys like Elijah Moore and Garrett Wilson, you know, 2 year top receivers, you know, young players, of course. And Zach Wilson, still a young quarterback. Mekhi Becton, still a young tackle. You know, you got Gardner and Johnson in the first round players I like, but still really young. So still think they're a little bit away from, you know, competing with a team like Buffalo in their division, for example. But at least in terms of, you know, competing and being in the hunt for a wild card position, I think the Jets could definitely put themselves in that spot after a draft like this.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the Jets go. Another winner for you?
Yeah, for sure. I thought, without a doubt, the day one winner of the draft was the New York Giants, landing Kayvon Thibodeau, 5th overall from Oregon, and Evan Neal, 7th overall, the offensive lineman from Alabama. Those were two players that I had graded in my top three. I had Neal rated as my second highest player in the draft and Thibodeau third, following Aiden Hutchinson right at the top. So I absolutely loved that draft from the Giants. It's hard to go against a team that grabbed two of the top three players that you have ranked overall. So love what they were able to do. You know, as the draft kind of went on, I thought day two and day three, wasn't a huge fan of a ton of their picks. I liked that they grabbed Dane Belton, a little bit of an Iowa shout there as a nice nickel player that the Giants could use. And but I thought that first round haul, two impact players at premium positions, it was hard for me to kind of look against what the Giants are doing. You know, new leadership there for them, and both the head coach and general manager position with Joe Schoen and Brian Daboll taking over those spots. So like what the Giants were able to do on day one, and that's of course where, you know, you're going to get those impact guys. So I liked what they did there.
Yeah, Giants seem like they have a plan. Adding Evan Neal, you can play him aside Andrew Thomas, and then suddenly maybe your offensive line's fixed a little bit. And adding a pass rusher is just never a bad idea. And they're a team where if some of their skill position players stay healthy, Sterling Shepard's had issues with that, Kadarius Toney had issues with that, Kenny Galladay had issues with that. But if those guys stay healthy, and Brian Daboll can help develop Daniel Jones the way that we saw him develop Josh Allen, you know, it's very positive. I feel like a huge winner for this draft in general was just the NFC East. Like, going into the draft, you kind of thought, okay, what are most of these teams doing? And I think the Giants, the Eagles, and the Cowboys all have very clear directions that they're going in. And even the Commanders. I mean, you add Jahan Dotson as a speed threat. I tweeted this out. Adding receiving threats for Carson Wentz, I don't really think that's going to help. I think we've seen who Carson Wentz is. But they draft Sam Howell, a guy that you liked a lot. I hate Sam Howell. But you could look at this Washington offense and say, okay, if they can keep Terry McLaurin in the building, that's a big if. And if they can keep Antonio Gibson and Jahan Dotson next year, if they really do struggle the way I think they will with Carson Wentz, they'll have a top five NFL draft pick and they'll be able to go after one of these quarterbacks and kind of start the rebuild that way. So at least Washington's in a more positive position now. So I think the NFC East was huge winners just in general.
Yeah, I thought that there was a lot of big ads in that division, which is kind of a rare thing. It's really only in the offseason when you could say the NFC East is huge winners, because it's not often that happens in the regular season. So I like that. I like to hear that, Eric. It's a nice change of pace.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll just touch on what the rest of the Eagles draft looked like. They got some good guys. N'Kobe Dean slid all the way to the third round. They picked him up. They needed a quality starting linebacker, and they filled it in. To me, that defense looks really good all of a sudden. And maybe like a depth corner away from being the best in the division.
Yeah, the secondary is still a major, major need. The Eagles did not grab a single DB, and I thought that was their biggest need going into the draft. So still have a significant major hole at both corner opposite Slay and at deep safety. So we'll see how they're able to do that and figure that out before the season starts. But yeah, in terms of the draft, you know, they end up trading up for Jordan Davis, 13th overall. This was a player I like a lot. I did have some other players available at that pick a little bit higher than Jordan Davis, but having picked him, I still had a first round grade on him. I think he's going to really kind of eat up the middle of that defense next to guys like Javon Hargrave and Fletcher Cox, and really allow some of these edge rushers that they've been able to re-sign and acquire recently to kind of fly up the field. Guys like Hassan Reddick on the outside, along with Josh Sweat and Derek Burnett, guys they brought back. So I really like the defensive line setup for the Eagles. And you mentioned it, grabbing N'Kobe Dean in the third round. You know, that was an interesting storyline to follow. One of the more interesting ones on day two of the draft. And, you know, there were a lot of rumors about what happened. You know, the facts of the matter are You know, N'Kobe Dean had a pectoral strain while he was training for the NFL draft while bench pressing, ended up sitting out of the combine and only did positional drills at his pro day at Georgia. So it was public knowledge at this point at the pro day that N'Kobe Dean had this strained pectoral, but he had told people that he was going to rehab it without surgery and expected to be ready for the start of mini camps and OTAs. And then after the Eagles ended up drafting him in the third round, everything from the Eagles side says we were comfortable drafting him. And N'Kobe Dean himself even said that he expects to report and, you know, participate in everything fully once things start going for, you know, off-season work in the Eagles facility. So the Eagles could end up getting a major steal. You know, I think even on the worst case scenario, say, you know, the total flip side, say the Eagles doctors say he needs to end up getting surgery on his pectoral and he misses a full year, I still think that's still a worthwhile selection in the third round. I mean, just touching on another team I thought had a great draft, the Baltimore Ravens. They draft David Ojabo, of course, a guy who tore his Achilles at his own pro day. He's going to be without the team for the start of the most of the season, but they still ended up thinking that value was worth it in the second round. So I thought that was incredibly great for the Eagles to grab Dean in the third round for sure. So could end up definitely being one of the steals of the draft.
Yeah, I'll go another winner here. I think the other team in Pennsylvania, I loved what the Steelers did this draft. I mean, the big question is taking Kenny Pickett in the first round a mistake? I would argue no. I mean, you were going into the season with just Mitch Trubisky and Mason Rudolph, two limited quarterbacks that we've never really seen play. They didn't have a ton of other team needs. I think their defense is pretty solid. It showed that last year, and they made some signings in free agency to fix the offensive lineup a little bit. They really needed to go best player available in this draft and just add some depth and replenish their wide receiving core, plus find out, maybe take a swing at quarterback. I just think taking a swing at quarterback is never a bad idea, especially if you don't have a quarterback, because they didn't give, and maybe if they had traded up, we'd feel a little differently, but Kenny Pickett slid to 20. Like, they didn't have to give up anything extra to get Kenny Pickett. And if Kenny Pickett doesn't work out and the Steelers don't really work out next year, guess what? They're going to be at the top of the class next year to get one of these really good guys. And suddenly you have a team that is built to win now around them. So I just think that the Steelers had a really great draft. George Pickens, a lot of people, I heard some people call him the wide receiver one in this draft. Just a classic Steelers pick, just kind of to pick the wide receiver that nobody really knows what to do with. And then they go ahead in the fourth round and get Calvin Austin III, a guy I really like as a speed deep threat. And then DeMarvin Leal, I mean, CBS Sports here gives him a draft grade of a B, but to me, I watch a lot of Texas A&M because I like Texas A&M, and I know he wasn't as good in 2021, but in 2020, he was an absolute beast. Right. He's a great defensive lineman, and that defensive line just got a lot scarier adding him in. You know, good organizations just always have good drafts, and Mike Tomlin's a good coach, and he's going to coach these guys up. And I think the Steelers are ultimately going to be fine. Do I think they'll finish better than third in the division? No, I don't think so, because there are elite quarterbacks in that division. But still, they are going to be fine, and they'll probably finish with a winning record again.
Let's take a break. Trey, unfortunately, the reality of human life is that someday we will all pass on. No one wants to think about it. It's an uncomfortable topic, but it's important to take care of you and your loved ones when that day comes.
That's right, Eric. Fortunately for our listeners, we know of a great guy that can help you set up your wills and trusts.
Absolutely, Trey. Our friend Andrew McCullough has you covered. You can find him on Twitter at AMCCULLOUGH105. His DMs are open, and he and the folks at Brindley Sullivan can help you take care of you and your family's estate planning needs. Don't just take our word for it, though. Here is University of Utah star and current draft prospect, Britton Covey, to tell us more.
Hey guys, Britton Covey here. As my long time at the University of Utah is coming to a close, it's time for me to start thinking about my future. There's no one I trust more than Andrew McCullough at the firm of Brindley Sullivan for my estate planning needs. Give his office a call to set up a free consultation at 435-673-9220. Andrew's firm is headquartered in St. George, but he spends plenty of time along the Wasatch Front taking care of his needs. So call him and tell him that Britt and Covey sent you.
More info at trustyourtrust.com.
Yeah, I agree with you. A good draft for Pittsburgh. Yeah, especially on the DeMarvin Leal point. You know, coming into the season, I think most people would have had him as the top interior defensive lineman in the draft. And as you mentioned, didn't necessarily have as strong a year last year, fell a little bit, but still a lot of talent there to potentially untap. And on the picket thing as well, I think you really kind of nailed it. You know, the Steelers were trying to trade up to see if they can make sure to get Pickett, but the fact they end up taking him at 20, that definitely makes me feel a little bit better about the situation as a whole. So yeah, I definitely thought they had a strong draft overall.
All right, one last winner from you, maybe.
Yeah, this one is actually maybe a little bit of a surprise to some people just because this team is so awful most times. But the Houston Texans, you know, a team that was picking third overall coming into the draft. You know, they've got a new general manager and new general manager, Nick Caserio, in there coming over from New England. And, you know, this was kind of his first go at it, you know, trying to reshape a roster that needs a lot of help. And, you know, ended up taking Derek Stingley third overall. I think you could argue maybe there were other players they could take, you know, potentially a lineman at that spot. But I think Stingley has a ton of upside and really kind of fits in with what the Texans, you know, they just need guys that can play. They're going to be able to let Stingley kind of roam free out there, out wide, and really like that pick. And then to follow it up by taking Kenyon Green, 15th overall, traded back a little bit with the Eagles from that 13th spot to end up making sure they could still take one of their top offensive linemen in this draft, one of the best interior guys in Kenyon Green. So really like those two picks on day one for the Texans. And then, you know, I thought they had a good rest of the draft as well. Jalen Petrie was a guy I even had a first round grade on. They grabbed him at the start of the second round and also grabbed guys from Alabama like John Metchie and Christian Harris, who I'm just definitely a big fan of watching them in college. So really like the draft for the Texans. Thought it was a little bit underrated. Really bad team. Don't think they're making the playoffs next year, but I think they set themselves up to have a little bit more success in the near future with the strong draft that they had.
Yeah, the way I explain the Texans being a winner in this blog post I did yesterday, because I agree with you, is that the Texans were just so bad that what they needed to do was just draft starting quality players. And they drafted, by my count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 starting quality players. That's a lot of starting quality players. And they made all these kind of no-name signings and free agency. They just have to get bodies in there that can play at the NFL level. And I think they got 6 guys that can play at the NFL level. I agree with you. I don't think they're going anywhere. I know some people don't like John Metchie as much because of his kind of inability to get off press sometimes, but as a deep threat and a returner, I think he's a great pick in the late second round. And to me, it just, the Texans didn't have a plan 2 years ago. They were just totally hopeless. Deshaun Watson wanted out, and now they've traded Deshaun Watson and they have a plan. And that plan is to just draft best players available and stock up as best as you can, probably have a lame duck coach in Lovie Smith, hang around, try to remain competitive in games. And they were pretty competitive in games last year. I think they can be competitive this year. I don't think they'll get blown out a ton, but they'll still probably end up with 4 or 5 wins, and they'll be in a spot to draft one of these quarterbacks or one of these edge rushers that we really like next year that could really change the franchise around. And who knows? But I think Davis Mills, with the addition of Kenyon Green, Damian Pierce, and John Metchie, is in a much better place than he was a year ago. The Texans look like they finally have more than one offensive weapon in Brandon Cooks. So I think the Texans did a pretty good job with this draft overall.
Yeah, I definitely like what they did. I mean, you kind of nailed it on that. They just needed to take good players, and I thought they did a good job of that.
All right. I'll go first with a draft that made me feel a way other than I think this team's a winner, but was still intriguing to me. And I wish Trey was here to talk about it, but the Titans draft. Listen, I understand that trading away your star right wide receiver, it sounds like the contract difference was literally $6 million. the Titans are not a team known for spending a ton of money, but still, I mean, AJ Brown, if he wants to play for you for $22 million and you're offering 16, come on, just offer 22 and keep your best offensive player. But for the hand they got dealt, they could have gotten more for AJ Brown, but they did okay. Treylon Burks, a lot of people compare him to AJ Brown. He's probably nowhere near as good. I view him as more as a wide receiver too, but they still have, oh my God, this is going to kill me. The fact that that name just escaped my head, Robert Woods. They still have Robert Woods and Treylon Burks now. That's an okay wide receiver pairing for Ryan Tannehill. They add Roger McCreary. They have been subpar in the secondary the last few years. Last year it improved, but they needed to keep taking those guys. Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, a lot of people like him as an offensive lineman who can kind of learn behind Taylor Luan. And then you draft Malik Willis. And what this tells me is this. The Titans are not contenders, but the Titans are also not bad. They are in this weird in-between where they're going to give Ryan Tannehill one more year to figure it out. And if Ryan Tannehill doesn't work, then they're just going to roll with this kind of new core that they got in Treylon Burks and Malik Willis. And not to mention, they draft a running back as well in Hassan Haskins. So they saw in that playoff game against the Bengals that the Tannehill, Derrick Henry, AJ Brown route, those guys were not going to take them where they wanted to go. And I think they did a successful job of being able to say, okay, here are some guys that could work out in the future, while also saying they're going to remain competitive in a pretty weak division.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like you said, Burks is almost a clone of AJ Brown, obviously with less certainty that he can be the high quality performer of AJ Brown, who's had almost 3,000 yard seasons, not quite, but almost. So, I mean, it's not necessarily an easy task to just say, oh, Treylon Burks, he's now AJ Brown, but it does kind of set up well for them to at least maybe not have as much dip in their offensive output as they necessarily expect him. So kind of like damage control is kind of what I think you're getting at there, that they need to kind of fix. And they also got Malik Willis. That could be kind of an interesting fit, I thought, for sure. Like if we see him throw a little bit or even get in there in some, you know, red zone packages or whatnot, I think that could kind of be an interesting long-term fit for a guy that doesn't necessarily have to play right away, but could maybe develop into a guy down the road.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I have one more bet. That made me feel, I know that they didn't take a quarterback, so it's hard to classify them as winners, but I really like the Seahawks draft class. I really do. I mean, it's ironic that the pick they got for Russell Wilson, they used to potentially fix the thing that Russell Wilson has been complaining about for years in the offensive line. They add Boyd Mafe, who was very good at Minnesota, kind of a big Seahawks defensive player that Pete Carroll's just going to mold and make better. They add Kenneth Walker III. Chris Carson is getting older. They always have running back depth issues, it feels like. I don't hate that pick. And then they get Kobe Bryant, who won the award for the best corner in the league in college football, playing aside Sauce Gardner, and I think he was the steal of the draft. I really like him as a player. I've heard really good things about him, and it just feels like, yes, the Seahawks are not going to be very good this year. They're punting on 2022. If you go into 2022 with your starting options being Geno Smith and Drew Lock, you're basically admitting that the season's a failure already. But they're going to be in a good place to rebuild even more next year when they have their own draft picks, and they're going to tank. They're going to tank responsibly. And I think that that's a solid move. I think for rebuild, we've seen in the NFL, it does not take long to do a rebuild, right? If you hit on a few draft classes, you can be back in 2 to 3 years. I think that's what the Seahawks and Pete Carroll are aiming to do here.
Yeah, I thought so too. Just touching on two of those depth corners that you mentioned. You mentioned Kobe Bryant from Cincinnati. I liked that pick a lot as well. You mentioned he won the Thorpe Award at Cincinnati last year. And they also got Tariq Woolen in the fifth round, UTSA corner, who's really tall and really fast. So raw skills, that's kind of a typical Seattle mold. We like guys that have kind of the height, weight, speed, and we'll try to coach them up into, you know, really good players. So I thought those were two really good players for them to grab. At corners, I kind of always think about, you know, Seattle with those long, rangy corners that have a really good ability to play in zone coverage and, you know, Legion of Boom type vibes. So I like what Seattle was able to do there on those picks. I thought the Kenneth Walker pick, I thought that was kind of an interesting one. It seems like almost kind of typical Seahawks when you think about like when they took Rashad Penny a couple of years ago. But yeah, other than that, I like the Seahawks draft in agreement with you on that.
All right. Do you have one that you wouldn't classify as a winner? Do you have a loser? Do you have anything like one more draft class to talk about, and then we'll move on and get out of here?
Yeah, I think one team that always has eyeballs on them, especially on day one, is the Green Bay Packers. Everyone wanted them to give Aaron Rodgers his receiver on day one. It did not end up happening. They take two front seven players from Georgia, Quay Walker, Devontae Wyatt, two outstanding picks. I think the Packers now kind of set up as having one of the best front sevens in all of football when you consider some of the guys that they already have there, with Rashawn Gary coming off the best year of his career, Preston Smith on the outside, or Zadarius Smith, they still have. So I like that the Packers grabbed those guys and then followed it up by still grabbing the receivers with Christian Watson. They grabbed Romeo Dubs as well from Nevada. So I like that how the Packers kind of went about things, you know, taking the best players available. You know, Georgia front seven players, a good idea to me. So they focused on that in day one, and we're still able to get some offensive players at receiver to help out Rodgers later on.
Yeah, I like Romeo Dubs. I work for Utah State, so I've seen him play a few times. And he's kind of just a tall, deep threat. He's not great at, like, beating press or anything like that. But for what the Packers do, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Alan Lazard. And you add another Alan Lazard to the offense, I think Alan Lazard's a pretty good player. So I think that the Packers – offensive coaching staff. We also say this about the Packers draft every year, and they've just gone out and won 13 games in back-to-back years. I think it's time that we start giving the Packers a little bit of a benefit of the doubt personally. And I think drafting those two great defensive players, like, you're right, the defense is going to be what's going to have to carry this team this year.
I really like Quay Walker. I thought that was such a good pick. Like, I did think N'Kobe Dean was going to end up going higher, but man, every time I watch Quay Walker, I was like, wow, this guy just screams like NFL quality player. And I think he fits in really well with what the Packers like doing with their linebacker core. I always think of that like fun, you know, 3-4, you know, they moved on from Zadarius Smith. I misspoke earlier, still got Preston Smith, but I think that linebacking core is so dynamic. And even Devontae Wyatt can really kind of get after the passer. I think even better than, you know, Trayvon Walker and Jordan Davis, guys on his own defensive line that were picked higher than him. So I really like those picks for the Packers. They just have a really kind of loaded defense, guys. They kind of homegrown, Eric Stokes, Jair Alexander, corners they took in the first round on the outside as well. So I think it's a really smart strategy, you know, developing that, you know, first round talent from within on your defense.
Yeah. And Aaron Rodgers can cover up for a lot. I think that's one thing that we've forgotten this offseason, is he's still Aaron Rodgers, even without Devontae Adams. He's probably going to put up 4,000 plus yards and 27 plus touchdowns this year. So I like what the Packers have done. I'll give one loser, and then we'll move on to who we think the offseason champion is. Justin Fields. I mean, it's very clear to me that the Bears are just rebuilding. Like, that's what their draft signified to me. They didn't take a wide receiver until Velus Jones in the third round. They passed on better wide receivers at pick 39 and pick 48. I mean, it's clear that this new regime does not view Justin Fields as their guy, which kind of sucks because he got drafted last year. But I think there's a very real chance that the Bears are just average, and they do have a first round pick next year, and they end up being a 6 or 7 win team and in the position to draft a quarterback again next year. I think that's a very real possibility. So as someone who liked Justin Fields last year coming out, I feel kind of bad because it doesn't feel like the Bears really committed to him this draft. It felt like they said, we have holes all over our roster and we're just going to work to try and fix those.
Yeah, I agree with you. I didn't like the Bears draft either. I liked Jaquan Brisker for sure. I thought he was definitely a good pick, but you know, combined with some of the other picks, I wasn't too fond of the Bears draft either. And yeah, I think that could be kind of tough sledding for the Bears this upcoming year. You know, Justin Fields again, he may be kind of struggling, you know, looking for where his help's at on the football field. So I had the same reaction to you about the Bears draft.
Yeah, so we'll see. And you hope it doesn't screw up Justin Fields for whoever his other possibility is going to be, because, you know, he was drafted high enough that he will get another shot, I think, as a team starter. But hopefully, you know, Chicago either moves on from him or doesn't ruin him too bad. So, yeah. All right. That was pretty comprehensive. I feel like we covered a lot of teams there. But before we go, let's just combine this. Let's do two teams that we're excited to watch on Game Pass every week this year. And one of those teams should be your offseason champion. Trey, go ahead. Ryan, go ahead. You start.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, I'm going to go with my offseason champ first. I'm going with the LA Chargers on this one. I think this is just a team that realizes who they are. They're a team on the rise with a quarterback on a rookie contract. And they said, you know what? We need to improve our team and spend a little bit right now. And they did that. They kept Mike Williams around as a receiver that, you know, Herbert is already familiar with. They traded a second and sixth round pick for Khalil Mack. They went out and signed J.C. Jackson in free agency. Also grabbed a couple other D linemen in free agency. Austin Johnson, Sebastian Joseph Day, signed Gerald Everett. And I thought they had a solid draft as well. I mean, they grabbed Zion Johnson in the first round, helped protect your young quarterback a little bit. Also grabbed some guys like JT Woods, safety from Baylor, Isaiah Spiller, Texas A&M running back, and Jamari Saylor, Georgia offensive lineman, three players I was pretty fond of in scouting, especially JT Woods. I think he's a really good deep safety that they grabbed. So I just thought the Chargers, you know, solid offseason. Maybe there's other teams that did kind of more dynamic things, but I thought the Chargers did exactly what they need to do this offseason, surround Herbert with a little bit more help. And a lot of that just came from re-signing Mike Williams and giving him a stronger defense around him. So I like that move for the Chargers. So always a fun team to watch, of course, when you get to watch Herbert just unload a deep ball. So fun watching the Chargers on Game Pass. And then the other team that I'll shout out, Game Pass offense, not even necessarily the most coherent team. I criticize their moves all the time, but the Arizona Cardinals offense is always fun to watch because Kyler Murray's running around and Cliff Kingsbury's sending out five receivers on regular plays. So yeah, that is, usually it's four receivers or whatnot, but yeah, the Cardinals offense, they always kind of do some fun things out there. When Kingsbury will scheme things up or Kyler Murray will go off and run off a crazy play. So those are some fun teams to watch. Really like the Chargers offseason and the Cardinals offense definitely being a team to watch on Game Pass.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we just have to mention these two teams. The draft really is so much about good teams just draft well, and you see why rebuilds have worked. To me, the offseason champions are the Chargers, but for me, I'll just go the other two top AFC teams. What the Bills and Chiefs did this offseason was awesome. I mean, the Chiefs, I know you trade away Tyreek Hill, but he had injury concerns and he wanted a ton of money and he was getting older and he's going to be 30 soon. So what did the Chiefs do? They said, okay, we'll trade him and we'll invest those picks in our defense and get an absolute stud in George Karlaftis, which gives them an edge rusher that they didn't have before. And Trent McDuffie, a good cornerback that Steve Spagnuolo can coach up. And then you get Sky Moore, a guy that people really like and someone who can replace kind of what Tyreek Hill does for them on offense. Plus, you still have Mecole Hardman and Travis Kelce, and you add Juju Smith-Schuster. The Chiefs, to me, they fixed their offensive line last year. This year, they went after their defense. They got a lot better on defense, and they keep their weapons around. And the other thing is, you have Patrick Mahomes. He's going to make whoever he plays with better. So to me, the Chiefs were a massive winner of the offseason. And then the same thing with the Buffalo Bills. I mean, what did the Bills do? They go out, they get Kyir Elam to solidified their back end. They needed depth for Trey White. And then they go get James Cook, who is Dalvin Cook's brother, I learned. And basically, if you watch James Cook, he's just like smaller Dalvin Cook. And if you can move like Dalvin Cook, you're going to be successful in the NFL. And if you're the Bills and you can select a smaller running back in the second round just to add to what your defense, to what your offense can be with all the weapons that you have already, you should do that. And they absolutely did do that. To me, the Bills were huge winners. They get Khalil Shakir as well, a guy out of Boise who can help and add some production for them, a guy kind of in the Gabriel Davis mode. The Bills and Chiefs just draft well now. They have for years, and that's what we're seeing now. The way we talk about the Ravens and the Steelers, I think it's time to put the Bills and the Chiefs into that mix as well, because those front offices are just some of the best in the league, and you can see it with the way they construct their rosters. So, you know, the rich get richer.
Yeah, I think those are good calls for sure. I mean, Brett Veach, you know, Chiefs GM, and Brandon Bean with the Bills, those guys are awesome. They've done an outstanding job for a long time. So, yeah, I like those, both those teams off seasons as well.
And I will just say, the Broncos, you have to throw them in there. I know their draft wasn't spectacular, but they add Randy Gregory in free agency, and they finally get a quarterback. And they've needed a quarterback forever. And they add some speedy players on defense and draft kind of best player available on defense. Now, right tackle is a question mark, but I trust Billy Turner enough. You know, the Broncos are going to be a good team this year. I'm just convinced by that. And I think they also have to be thrown in this conversation as well. So, Are they on the level of these big AFC contenders? Only time will tell. We'll have to see how Russell Wilson looks. But if he can play even a tenth of what he was when he was in his prime in Seattle, the Broncos are going to be fine, and they're going to be competing with the Bills and the Chiefs and the Ravens and the Browns this season. So, you know, I have to shout out my Broncos, obviously. So that's what I'm doing here to close out our final offseason podcast. I'm finally excited to watch them on Game Pass again. So
yeah. There you go. One plus about the Broncos is, you know, Russell Wilson. One negative is you're in the best division in football. So there's a good and a bad for you.
Yeah. But still, being competitive is fun. They have not been competitive in a while. So that's kind of my thought. All right, Trey. Not Trey, Ryan. Jesus.
Second time.
That was embarrassing. Ryan. This is just a final thank you for committing really just a buttload of time to me over the past few months. You've been really great and always showed up when we needed you to. And we expect to have you back as our senior draft analyst next year, because this was great. So thank you so much for helping us out. And we'll see you when we do the NFC East preview, and definitely during the season a little bit, but your episode to episode appearances will be going down after this. But thank you for joining me for about 2 months straight here.
Of course. It was fun to come on, Eric, and Chad Ball always helped me kind of keep on my toes, keep getting ready and reading up on what's going on. And yeah, as you said, excited to talk about CJ Stroud and Bryce Young next year. Got some fun prospects at the quarterback position to get back into. So we're already moving on. We're already on to the 2023 NFL draft over here. So I can't wait.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, there will be a basketball episode out tonight, and then we're taking a little break, but keep an eye on the End Zone Twitter podcast, Twitter page at End Zone Pod. Ryan, why don't you give a quick plug to all your stuff, because you've been so great, and we'll just do plugs today and we'll get out of here.
All right. Yeah. You can give me a follow on Twitter at roadkill823. Give me a follow on Instagram at RyanCarney823. I have my real name on Instagram, my Xbox and online persona name on Twitter. I do a couple podcasts as well. As Eric mentioned at the top, I do a podcast called Rody on the Horn on Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys are listening right now, we're on there. And then I also do another podcast called Front Office U, where we interview people that work in sports and learn about what they do for a career. And then I guess I kind of do this End Zone Pod. You guys listened all the way through. I'm a senior draft analyst. It's fun stuff. Always like coming on and chatting with Eric. So yeah, thanks again, Eric, for having me on. Thanks everybody for following along and listening. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys all again soon.
Absolutely. You can follow Trey on Twitter at TreyWatkins099. You can find his writing at Black Sports Online. He's also got a Barcelona blog now that he's writing for. Go check that out. That's all in his Twitter bio. And you can follow me on Twitter at Eric Jensen Sport. You can follow my blog, dramaofitallsportsblog.com. And yeah, thank you so much for listening. This officially really marks the end of the football podcasting year. It goes really from July to April, and then May and June are kind of dead. So thank you for listening to us for the 2022 season. We will be back with you in late May, early June. And until then, enjoy the off season. Peace out, guys.